Coming to you live from my 30th birthday party, it's the Hand Plus Podcast, where each week I, Joe Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in streaming, whether it's news, shows we watched, upcoming shows, trailers, anything really related to streaming. We're here to break it down, give you updates, saying, hey, this is what's coming out, this is what came out, this is what you should watch, this is what maybe you can avoid, hopefully even if... you don't agree with our reviews, it can kind of give you an idea if you would like a show or not. Tristan, how was your week in streaming? It's been a little bit longer of a week than normal, but...
It has been, but I feel like that time has just given me more time to watch some stuff. And yeah, it's going to be like a finale-heavy episode. You know, it seems like every big show, especially in streaming, kind of ended within the last week. So it's going to be a fun discussion of some of our favorite finales and... maybe getting to some of the our least favorite finale as we talk about that by comparison, but it'll be a great conversation here. But yeah, I'm definitely excited to get into our big finale episode.
Yeah, it's our big finale episode. Obviously, you know, you had Succession, Ted Lasso, Barry all having their series finales this week, so we decided we're gonna end our show talking about our favorite TV series finales that are currently streaming. Tristan will give his top 10, I'll give my top 10, and if we got time, we're gonna break it down and give the show's overall top 5. But let's kick it off with some news over in Amazon Prime Video. And that is Jack Ryan, the Tom Clancy-inspired series. It has released a trailer revealing that the final season, speaking of finales, is going to drop June 30th. I watched the first season of Jack Ryan. I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't enough to like hook me that I need to watch season 2 and 3. So I never watched beyond season 1, but I thought it was a quality show. Have you watched any Jack Ryan? Are you excited?
Yeah, I also watched the first season and I definitely liked it. You know, it's one of those shows that I feel like my dad or like my uncles would be very into. You know, it's like very much a dad show, and I'm excited that it's coming. I'm not excited for its ending, I guess, but it's always good when a show actually gets to have a final season and not just end. You know, we're gonna talk a lot about finales this week, so it's definitely a good thing for a show to be like, here's our final run. And if it seems like more often than not you're getting that now, so I think that's a good thing.
Yeah,
and this honestly might inspire me to go and binge it, because it was a solidly good, you know, thriller, so I feel like that might be a good weekend binge to go through and get myself through some Jack Ryan.
Yeah, definitely. Some other Amazon news: Will Ferrell is eyed to play legendary football coach and commentator John Madden and a David O. Russell movie about the creation of the Madden video game. It's kind of one of those castings, Will Ferrell as John Madden, where if you were like, hey, who's your fan casting for John Madden? Will Ferrell is never a name I would think of, but as soon as I saw it, I'm like, it weirdly works, I think. I'm excited to see it. David O. Russell's kind of hit or miss as a director. He's very much missed recently. Definitely onset problems, but I'm intrigued by, especially, you know, I didn't watch it, but the movie about the creation of Tetris, the movie about Air signing Michael Jordan to the Nike shoe deal, like things that you would think would be kind of boring, but ended up being pretty decent movies. So I'm excited to see if this will kind of follow suit.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, as we're getting into the video game movie era, like what does a video game movie actually look like, you know? And where I'm as curious to see, because we're also seeing a Gran Turismo movie coming out this year that's like based on a story about Gran Turismo players who went and played in the actual Gran Turismo race. And it's not really an adaptation of the game. It's an adaptation of this real life story that also involved the video game. So that's a kind of interesting in for the video game genre. But yeah, I think I'm interested in Will Ferrell and how he's going to play this. This could just be goofy and silly, but it could also be kind of like a fun Oscar caliber level turn for him too, if he wanted to go that far forward. David L. Russell also seems to be a director where when he's on, it seems to be lining up the awards, and when he's off, it just gets nothing, you know? So this could go one way or the other, and I'm curious to see it. Hopefully it goes in the right direction, but I'm going to be watching this one either way, mostly because of the David L. Russell connection, and like the Will Ferrell casting is so odd that he's going to bring in something to the role, whether it's just goofy or whether it's actually great, we'll still be seeing.
Yeah, I mean, John Madden was kind of a goofy guy, you know, especially as a commentator, for kind of saying somewhat comedic, funny things. So I think Will Ferrell can definitely bring that energy. We do have some live comments. Spinner58 said, I'm glad to see you live, but it's kind of late. Hey, this is what happens when you are a manager and your cashier doesn't show up to work.
I'm literally wearing my uniform in this video, so... yeah, and I'm also moving, so if you enjoy this background, tomorrow morning I won't have it anymore. So it's been a busy day, let me tell you.
And then Spinner58 says, happy birthday, Joe. It is my 30th birthday currently because it is past midnight. So
look at you. Happy birthday, Joe. Not for me yet. You're still 29 in my eyes.
All right. Well, yeah. For another 23 minutes, I will be 29 to you. All right. And kicking over to Hulu, we have Justified City Primeval coming to FX and Hulu July 18th. I'll be honest, Tristan, I never watched Justified. It's not a show I followed. I believe my dad caught it after it finished. Is this a movie? Is this a continuation season series? What is this?
It looks like it's a Hulu continuation series, sort of like a spinoff sequel. They're bringing back the main character, Detective Raylan Givens, played by Timothy Olyphant, who you might have recently been seeing in The Mandalorian. This was kind of him playing the old-time sheriff. If you liked his role in Mandalorian, this is essentially that, but, you know, in, like, the real world, you know, and this takes him from kind of a totally different location to now he's across in New Jersey, so or in Detroit, I mean, so it's going to be in another side of the country, so he's going to be a much more unique setting, you know, for, like, a Western detective kind of story to be set in the urban Detroit. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and I can't wait to see how they bring back this main character. Like, is he the lead, or is he just going to be kind of like the Han Solo guiding figure of this new show? But yeah, I'm a big fan of the original Justified. I think it's a great cop drama, and it has some all-time level performances in it, and you talk about some of the best TV dramas. I feel like Justified is one that doesn't get talked about as much as it should be talked about, especially when you're talking about like cop dramas. So if you're a big fan of cop dramas like The Shield or The Wire, I feel like you get a lot out of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a show I've kind of wanted to check out, but it's on that long list of shows that I have marked off. I'm going to watch it someday, but deep down in the back of my mind, I know I never actually will.
Yeah, we're talking about our finales, and as I go through the list of shows, I was thinking that too. I was like, this is one that I tell myself I'll watch, but am I going to, you know? Yeah. I'll definitely be watching this City of Primeval. I'll be reviewing that when it comes to Hulu.
All right. And over on Apple TV Plus, we have our first finale discussion. Ted Lasso had season 3 and series finale this last week. I know season 1 and 2 got a lot of praise. Season 3 got a lot of mixed reactions because a lot of fans felt like it kind of treated Ted Lasso as a background character and not as the lead. Tristan, what are your thoughts on the finale of Ted Lasso?
Yeah, I somewhat echo the disappointment in that I love the first two seasons. I thought they were so wholesome and they built these characters so well. In the third season, I feel like a lot of the problem is that they built their characters so well that most of them have like already completed their character arcs. And like season 4 is just kind of like them at the point where they've already done their developments and they're kind of just like sitting around doing like soap opera level plots and things like that. And I do feel like Ted Lasso has become a background character in the way that he's never had much of an arc across this series. He learns how to be a better coach and how to be a better leader and things like that. But as in terms of like personal growth, I didn't see much of him this season. And it feels like he's just kind of this shamanistic figure who's guiding all these other characters to their self-actualization, even though he has himself not done a ton of growth. And I'm satisfied with how they wrapped up this thing because it very much feels like the series finale. They've been kind of talking about it like it's the end. The actors are saying like we're not really don't have any other plans for the future, but it has not been like canceled. So I imagine, you know, in a few years maybe the fire will be lit once again and they might come back and bring everybody back together again. But this definitely had a sense of finality to it, and it wraps up everyone's plots almost too neatly, almost too much in a bow. And I feel like that is why people were let down by this season. This is a little bit too neat, a little bit too cozy, and where the other seasons were wholesome, this one just kind of feels easy, you know? And I feel like there's a big difference between being heartfelt and just being simple. And season 3 seems like it went just too far down the simplistic route for me.
All right, yeah. So do you think, did season 3 ruin it? Like, is there any point for me watching this show? Or
I absolutely think that it's still a show that's worth watching. Like, season 3 might not be the best of the three seasons, but it's definitely a strong season, and I feel like it has some of the better episodes of the series built into that season, even if the whole season as a whole is a week your way to end it.
All right. and I still want to check this out. It's high priority. It's probably my number one priority of shows I haven't watched.
I'm sure you'd love it.
Yeah, I know. Like, I love the it was based on a series of commercials advertising essentially that NBC Sports is going to cover the Premier League. I love those commercials. So I definitely want to check the show out. But from Apple TV, we move over to Pluto TV. We don't have fully enough time to cover this, but we just wanted to give mention that the season one finale of The Great Game did come out, the Robert De Niro-led show. We're hoping that it'll get continued. Not 100% sure how it's going to go, but I thought it was a great season one finale. Tristan, I know you watched it a little bit, but we don't fully have time to talk about it, but we just wanted to acknowledge the great season one finale that was The Great Game.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Hopefully we can spend some time on that next week or in the first couple of weeks, because it's one of those shows that I feel like people aren't talking about or watching enough, but with Robert De Niro and Drew Barrymore and such an electric cast and with so many like twists, and I can't wait, especially because like that cameo at the end and the last scene, like they got to have another season. That's how I feel about it. But when you talk about Pluto Originals, yeah, it didn't get the ratings necessarily that they would need to. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
Okay, and over on in the world of Disney Plus, surprisingly not a lot to talk about with Disney Plus this week. They just dropped all of the Indiana Jones content in preparation for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. However, they also dropped American Born Chinese, which is based on the comic book. Essentially, it was a comic and a show that delves a lot with Chinese lore and Chinese mythology. They dropped the entire first season. I only watched the first two episodes. I'm really liking it so far. It's a fun show. Definitely a family show, but I feel like there is a minimum age for who should watch it just because there is a lot of people talking in Chinese or Mandarin or whatever with subtitles. So if you have younger kids that can't read very quickly or very well, they're probably not going to enjoy the show as much. Just because of that reason, but it deals a lot with like teenagers and their problems. So I feel like if you got teenagers in the house, it's a good show for them. Adults can enjoy it too. I'm really liking it so far. There's a little bit of disconnect because it feels like there's two or three storylines going on right now, and it's hard to figure out how they all connect to each other. But essentially, you have this kid who obviously, like the title, he's American-born Chinese. And this new kid who moved from China is at the school, and they're having him guide the kid around. And turns out there's a little bit more to this new student than we were led to believe in the beginning. But Tristan, I know you haven't watched the show, but you have read the comic. Are you excited for this show? Has the trailers and stuff made you feel like it's going to be a solid adaptation?
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure at first because you see Disney Plus original and you don't quite know how they're going to go with it, you know, but when I see the cast and like the ambition of the action and things like that, I'm really excited to see how they adapt this. And yeah, I read this book, it got great reviews. It was so, like, really acclaimed. It's a graphic novel. So it's not, you know, issue to issue, but it's like a singular contained story that happens to be written out in like the form of a comic book. So I'm really excited to see it. And yeah, you mentioned that it has those three different storylines and the comic has the same structure of these three separate storylines that may or may not connect in certain ways, but certainly like thematically, yeah. I think connect with each other, you know? So I think a lot of the fun of this is watching those three storylines and seeing how these sort of like separate fables, almost like folklore tales in like the modern day in certain ways, and how they kind of connect to each other thematically and connect to like these archetypes of struggle. And also these individual people, you know, this child struggling to like figure out his identity, you know, he's half American, he's half Chinese. He's kind of like outcast in school and trying to figure out his way around that. That was a big part of the book, is that he was felt like he was this mix of identities, not quite sure how he was going to define himself. And I felt like all these different storylines kind of tie into that particular theme and that particular struggle. So I'm really excited to watch this adaptation and that cast, especially. How is the cast, seeing everybody from Everything Everywhere All at Once, practically the whole cast, you know, back together?
It's weird. I thought his name, K.Y. Kwan, was going to have a much bigger role. Like, I assumed he was going to potentially be like the dad. But he has this very small minor role so far as like this guy in a TV show who's supposed to be like this racist depiction of a Chinese person from like a 90s sitcom. And so I'm wondering if he's going to have a bigger role moving forward, like if we're going to see him in the modern day or anything like that. But that was what was most shocking to me, is how small his role was. And if like Disney, if his role stays small, if Disney knew everything going forward of like, hey, when this show is released, he's going to be an Oscar winner, if they're like, oh, we probably should have cast him as the dad and not just the small minor role.
Yeah, it'll grow, I'm sure, as the story goes along, if I were to predict based off of, what I don't know.
I get that. But yeah, if I were to have any like comparatives to this show, it feels like a 2010s ABC Family style show, like Secret Life of the American Teenager or something like that, but just better done and with fantasy injected as far as like dealing with high schoolers and their problems. It's like that somewhat similar of a tone, if I were to have a comp for what this is, I guess, if you haven't seen a trailer and you don't really know what it is.
Sounds like something I'd love. I'm all in.
Yep. All right, and I'm all in as well. I watched the first two episodes today, and I'm really enjoying it. And now we are moving over to Max to talk about two of the most talked about finales this week, and that is Barry and Succession. I have not watched a single episode of either show. Tristan, I know you've watched both of them, so I will let you have the floor and talk about both finales.
I'm gonna start out with Succession, because that seems to be the one that everyone is talking about, So I am gonna have to repeat a lot of what I've heard. This has been getting so much praise, and I'm gonna have to echo a lot of the praise. And I think when you go up to a show like this, and the whole entire premise of this show is about rich people, trying to compete to eventually become the heir of the father's company, once he passes away, and there are all these extreme level, swearing at each other, like extreme privilege and like disassociation from reality level rich, where they've never really had to struggle over anything financially in their lives. And it seems like that whole plot would revolve around who is going to inherit the throne, essentially. And it kind of does. But I think what this finale does so well is that it pulls back from that, and it kind of reminds you that the whole struggle of who's going to take over this company is sort of like farcical and ridiculous, and you're here for these characters, and I think it leaves you at the end with, a character that you watched try and climb the ranks this whole entire time, and now he's at that point where he did not end up getting what he wanted to get, and he's kind of just looking off in the distance and realizing like what else does he have left, because he's rooted his entire life, but not just his life, but his like existence, his whole identity has revolved around being part of this corporation and trying to climb this corporate ladder, and now realizing that I don't have that ladder anymore. I don't have There's nothing left within me, And this, I think, it feels like it's a meditation a little bit on the cost of capitalism and then the cost of all this great wealth. And we like to look at these people and think of them as just these like mutants of evil that are so wealthy and so rich. And then this kind of has this tragic empathy where it looks at them and is like, just imagine how terrible that must feel to be that person, to have carved out all of your humanity and all of your empathy and throw it away so you could try and climb this wealthy ladder. Like, what does that leave you with? Just this shell of a person with nothing. And I love this show. I think it came out at a great time when people are really trying, like, this the clash of the wealthy and the working class seems to be like at the forefront of the conversation right now. And this show is kind of leading that conversation. It feels like one that people are going to go back and watch over and over and over again with more and more perspective as this conversation gets more and more long, So I definitely recommend watching this, even if you haven't, watched any of it yet, and you think, oh, I know how it ends, kind of. I'm going to get it spoiled for me. It's not about the last shots or the last couple of scenes, It's about the journey of getting there and the journey of the characters getting there. So I definitely recommend catching up on Succession. And that finale can definitely go down as one of those all-timers, of leaving things just slightly ambiguous enough that it's just kind of frustrating, And I feel like when you get to our top list, you're going to realize that I kind of enjoy a finale that's just a tinge of frustration in there. You just want to have that little itch of like, God, I wish I could just spend more time here with these characters, because the finale wants to leave you hungry, and this finale left me hungry, but also, satisfied with what I had. So highly, highly recommend that one.
All right. And what are your thoughts on the Barry finale?
Barry, I'm a bit more mixed on. I think the tonal shift that took over this show once Bill Hader became the creative lead is really, really noticeable here. In the first half of the show or so, it's Bill Hader and it's Alan Berg, I think it's his name. He did Silicon Valley and a lot of comedy before this. So the clash of Bill Hader clearly taking this as like a very serious drama, and also Alec Berg not taking it that seriously. And I feel like it took itself a little bit too seriously, a little bit too on the dark side here. You know, I feel when you compare it to something like Breaking Bad that is going on a similar arc here, and you can criticize Breaking Bad for like making Walter White look too cool sometimes and like being almost like in love with the badassery of Walter White. And this show feels like it's almost the opposite. It feels like by the end, like Bill Hader like hates Barry and he's just like disgusted by this character. And you can feel that like disgust through the camera. And I think it's a strong tonal shift when you start the show being comedically engaged with this character and you end it being like, I don't want to see this character anymore. You know, and I think that's effective in the finale where you get to the end and you're like, I don't want more of this character. It's almost like the opposite of what I was just talking about, where some finales leave you hungry and this finale leaves you like, I got to get away from this guy, Barry. You know, everyone's cut him off. I got to be the one who finally cuts him off because I've had too much. I can't take any more of this guy. And I feel like that is very intentional. And this whole season seems like it was focusing on the people affected by Barry, on his ex-girlfriend, on his ex-acting coach, and like the father of his victims and things like that he didn't really think about. And this finale almost feels like you're the last victim, you know, like you're the last person who has been ruined by this guy and you got to be the last person to cut him off. So I like the finale of Barry. I think the tonal swing was a little bit of an adjustment, but as a whole, I think it was a strong ending, and I'm curious to see how it holds up if you go back and watch this as a whole series, as a binge, you know, because I'm curious to do a rewatch of this one.
All right, yeah. Like I said, it's a show I've never watched, but I do want to watch it at some point. It's on the back burner, and it's kind of on that list of shows that I want to watch, but part of me knows I never will, just because it seems like every month there's a new show getting added to the list, and I'm not
watching. That's the problem. How do you... Barry and Succession finales literally aired at the same night on the same channel, like after each other. You know, it's like they're on top of each other on this conversation. It feels like a disservice to both, but also mostly to Barry, because it feels like everyone's talking about Succession and not as many talking about Barry.
Yeah. All right, you ready to hop over to Netflix?
I'm ready. Where are we going?
All right, first off, we got a new trailer for Black Mirror Season 6. Black Mirror, one of the all-time great shows. Essentially a modern take, or like a modern version of the Twilight Zone, but with less like fantasy elements. It's strictly more like sci-fi and not sci-fi but digital and computers and how they affect our lives. But that show is coming out June 15th. Tristan, did you get to watch the trailer? Are you excited for season 6? Do you think it's going to be on par with the rest of the show?
Yeah, I'm really, really extremely excited for season 6. Season 5 to me was like a slight step out from quality, but still a great season. And I'm so invested, I'm so sold that I decided not to check out this trailer. I decided actually I'm just going to go into this season blind. And I feel like some of the fun of Black Mirror is letting that premise like slowly wash over you, like picking up the details of the world until you start to realize what's going on in the episode. And I decided I was going to avoid the trailer so that I can kind of have that journey of going into it with questions and not really knowing what each episode is going to be about or who's going to be in it even, you know. That's some of the fun of the show. So can't wait for it. June 15th, only, you know, a couple weeks away, but I did not watch the trailer. Hope it was good, though.
Yeah, I was hoping you watched the trailer because I had that same mentality you did of, like, I know I'm going to watch this. I want to have the least amount of information possible going into it. I don't want any spoilers, so I avoided the trailer, too. Didn't watch a single whole frame of it. And so I guess we really can't review the trailer, but it came out. So if you're unsure if you're going to watch this season of Black Mirror, which if you're a Black Mirror fan, I don't know why you would be. The trailer is out there. But as far as actual content Netflix put out, I watched the first episode of FUBAR, which is Arnold Schwarzenegger's new show on Netflix, where he plays a CIA agent, and he's kind of this family man, older man, who has just retired from the CIA when his handler calls him back for one last mission, where he essentially, when he was younger in his prime, he had to kill this warlord, and this warlord had a young son. And during the time where he was undercover working with the warlord, he befriended the son, killed the dad, but the son never knew he killed the dad. So he kind of watched out for him, made sure he got into all the best schools, hoping that this kid would go on a different path. But turns out he didn't. He has decided to continue his father's work. And now they're sending him back in there because he's the only person, his old identity is the only person that this kid would trust to be able to allow them to go in there to get this big powerful, basically WMD. He goes down there, and spoiler alert, also there's an agent currently there that he has to go and rescue. He has to get WMD and rescue the CIA agent that's currently there. But what Arnold Schwarzenegger's character doesn't know, and this is revealed in the first episode, and you can kind of figure it out watching the episode, the agent that he is going to rescue is his daughter that he did not know was a CIA agent, and his daughter and the rest of his family did not know that Arnold Schwarzenegger was a CIA agent. So they had a very distant relationship. She always wondered why her father was always gone. And it's a fun show. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's high quality, but I think if you're an Arnold Schwarzenegger fan, there's enough in there to enjoy. If you're not really like an action person, it's kind of just fun, dumb, good background show. It's not going to win an Emmy, but I think it's at least enjoyable. And that's,
does this feel like Arnold's comeback? Is he going to be the next Netflix king, or is this kind of just a show that's going to drop but no one's going to talk about ever again?
Probably closer to option two. I don't really think this is going to be... I think he saw Sylvester Stallone do Tulsa King on Paramount Plus, and he's like, oh, I want to do a streaming show. And this is what he did. It's not going to change the game. It's not like the new John Wick where all of these old action stars are going to come out with their streaming, you know, show or anything like that, where all of these other services are going to try to copy this. I think it is what it is. It's not, you know, breaking the mold. It's not creating a new mold. It just kind of,
it's not the great game.
Yeah, it's not the great game. It's just, it's fine. It's solid. Like I said, if you're not an action person, if you watch the trailer and you're like, this isn't for me, the quality of the show is not going to change your mind. But if you watch the trailer and you're like, oh, I'd like this, then definitely it's at least worth checking out. It's relatively entertaining.
Any good Arnold one-liners you can repeat?
Nothing memorable that sticks out, but there are things where they definitely took moments or memorable scenes from his past work and, like, snuck them in there. They're not, like, super overt or anything. It's kind of just subtle. Like, it's more just taking, hey, what is Arnold Schwarzenegger good at, and let's make sure that's in this show. But there are moments that are kind of funny where he puts on, like, this, like, the opening scene, he has to do this thing to steal these diamonds, and so he puts on a firefighter uniform, and it's, like, right when he turns it on, and then you see his character, like, start running and jumping on the back of a fire truck, and it's, like, very clear they only had him do the put on the whole firefighter gear so they could cover up the stuntman better.
Yeah, they had a shot of Arnold going like this, and then suddenly it's some other guy doing everything else.
Yeah, you know? Pretty much. Yep. That the stuff like that, if you're into dumb stuff like that, it's kind of a bonus instead of a negative. Just where you're like mentally like, oh, they only did that to cover the stuntman. But it's a solid show. It's a solid 7 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10, fun, dumb action show.
I watched a couple of things on Netflix this week, too.
And I know you did. You watched Missing on Netflix. I believe that's the sequel movie, right?
Yeah, it's a sequel-ish to Searching, which came out a couple of years ago. It's Searching and Missing both are entirely, you know, camera, screen capture movies. So it's someone goes missing. In the first movie, it was about a dad who is finding his missing daughter, and you're following the movie entirely through his, you know, Google searches and stream Skype calls and things like that. And this movie, interestingly, it's a sequel-ish. I'll say that because the opening scene here is the main character of this movie. It's played by Storm Reid. Her name is June, and it's her watching like a Netflix true crime reenactment of the first movie. So like you get actors standing in for the characters from the first movie, and it's like this sort of Netflix drama adapting the events of the first movie that the main character is watching. So it's kind of an interesting way of plugging it in. So you get some fun little cameos and stuff in there. But yeah, this pulls an interesting twist too, because rather than being a parent looking for their daughter, you have Storm Reid playing this rebellious young teenager who doesn't care about her parents, other old, you know, boomers, what do they know about anything? You know, I'm a young kid, I'm gonna go get drunk with my friends. And then she's out getting drunk with her friends and her mom goes missing, and she takes it upon herself to track her mother's whereabouts, see who she was spending her time with, and try and find out what happened to her mom. And it's, you know, a nice thematically, it's about, you know, the connections of parents and teens growing up. You know, she's realizing she doesn't really connect with her mom like she used to, and it's kind of at the detriment of her searching to find her. You know, she should know who she's spending her time with and things like that, but she doesn't because they don't talk, you know. And it's a nice character arc and development there for her, and you know, nice little twists. And it's always fun to see how they work in the capturing of the screen elements. You know, they're a bit more ambitious with how they do it here. They'll do a little bit more split screening and like, oh, we use our cell phone for this scene, we're going to use this device for this scene. They do kind of more of the playing around with it. So if you enjoy that gimmick, there's a lot of that gimmick here, but it's definitely in a way just more of the same thing from the first movie, but just a little bit more ambitious in certain ways and from a different perspective. So it's more the first movie. I like the first one. I like this one just about as much as I like the first one. Maybe a little tiny bit more, because I think Storm Reed is a compelling lead in this, to be honest. So they're both about on the same level, and I recommend this one if you like the first one. And I recommend this one even if you haven't seen the first one, because it's not like all of a sudden somebody shows up in the first movie and you got to understand the plot point or something like that. You know, it's just the same similar premise as the first movie. So check it out. It's on Netflix just now. It came out this year, so it's a nice 2023 release for your list on Letterboxd, you know.
All right. A reality show. I can't get through an episode of The Hand Plus without talking about a reality show, but we have season 2 of The Ultimatum, and this is Ultimatum Queer Love, where season 1, essentially the premise of the show is you have these couples. One person is essentially like, we need to get married or we're breaking up, because this on again, off again, or just this waiting around for you to be ready, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, if you're not wanting to marry me, I'll find someone who is. Season 1 was just straight couples. Season 2 is pretty much all lesbians or like non-binary women, I guess. I don't know the correct terminology, but for the most part, it's lesbians. And I feel like this is a better route for the show, because how it works is they issue the ultimatum, then these five couples get together, they all somewhat live together in this villa for like 5-ish days, all getting to know each other, and then after that time period, they all find a person that they want to couple up with and do a trial marriage for 3 weeks, and then they go back to the original partner and do a trial marriage with them for 3 weeks, and then everyone at the end makes the decision, do I want to leave this show and get married to my original partner? Do I want to leave this show with the person I did the first trial marriage with? Or do I want to leave this show alone? And I feel like this route works better, because in season 1, where it was all straight couples, you had essentially, and it was 5 couples, you essentially had 4 people to pick from, because you couldn't pick your original partner, and like a straight guy is not going to pick another straight guy, and so he has 4 options of one of the other women on the show that's not his partner. But in this one, you could pick basically anybody but your original partner, or obviously yourself. So 5 couples, you now have 8 people to pick from that could be a potential match for you, or someone that you could see yourself in a relationship with, rather than 4. And I feel like it makes sense. There's a lot more drama this season. It's a lot messier this season, a lot more enjoyable. And I told my fiance, as we were like midway through, because they've released 2 batches of episodes now, I told my fiance, I don't want to see another straight version of this show, because the straight version season 1 was boring, because no one really liked each other. Season 2, there's a lot more potential for shakeups, a lot more crying, a lot more sadness, a lot more people cheating on their partners. It's quality entertainment.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of drama, you know, and if they're on the gay people to the drama, you know, you just get extra drama. So yeah. I'm all in on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimatum Queer Love. You know, it's a lot of people that are, you know, need therapy. It's really what it is. People that don't like to communicate in their relationships. You know,
I can see that.
All right. And then one last thing you watched on Netflix was season 3 of I Think You Should Leave.
I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. First 2 seasons were amazing. They were like the funniest things I've seen in any streaming platform in so long. They're just completely absurd. They follow almost every sketch outside of a handful that have like guest actors follow Tim Robinson, who's a comedian, and he plays these various absurd characters that are just very oddly committed to the bit, or like really specific And there's a character he plays in this season called the driving crooner, where he drives around and on the side of his driver's side window, he has like a fake cigar and a fake top hat. And he tries to get directly next to the cars next to him and pretend that he's like smoking the cigar with the top hat on, and gets like extremely, extremely mad if someone gets away from him. And he's like, they're trying to make it look fake. And he's giving this guy a ride home who is just like, I got in the wrong car with this extremely weird guy. And he starts to realize like people are like, someone pulls up next to him and starts like threatening his life, saying, if you don't take that sticker off the window, I'm going to kill you. And like a very odd world that he lives in. And I love this series. This season was not as necessarily memorable, I think, as the first two seasons were, but there's some like all-timer weird sketches in this one. There's another one where he's, you know, if you've seen like pay it forward things at drive-thrus, where someone will be like, you know what, I'm going to pay for the person behind me because I'm feeling good today. And then you kind of hope that the person behind you says, you know what, I'm going to, since you paid for mine, I'm going to pay for the person behind me. And so he drives up to the drive-thru and says, I'm going to pay for the person behind me. And they play it like it's a really wholesome kind of moment. This guy's deciding to pay for someone behind him. And then he goes out, he skirts around in the giant corner circle and comes around behind the other guy and orders like 99 fries, 200 cheeseburgers and the whole entire menu, and tries to get the guy in front of him to pay for him as in the pay it forward chain. And the guy gets out and starts yelling at him, saying, I'm not paying for all of that. And he says, you got to pay for it. It's a pay it forward chain. And of course, someone pulls up behind him, and he's like, oh, they're starting to pay it forward chain. I'm going to have 99 cheeseburgers, 200 Cokes. And it becomes this giant circle of a pay it forward chain that he just refuses to give up on and say no to, because he wants to pay it forward chain. You got to pay for my burgers. And it's a hilarious skit there for sure. Some great highs in this season. I can't wait to watch it over again, because I feel like some of the biggest characters of the first two seasons kind of grew as I rewatched it. But for me, it's a week to three seasons, but still has some good standout episodes for sure.
All right, yeah. And I think that pretty much wraps up all of our streaming services this week. Do we want to do our MVP of the week now and then talk about our top finale streaming, or do we want to finish or end with the MVP of the week? Because I'm going to guess MVP of the week is coming from either Barry or Succession. And so I feel like it's pretty much going to be your pick.
Yeah, I'm going to say we should just do it right now, because I didn't think about doing it for the actual list. So yeah, let's go with you were correct on your call that it's going to be Barry or Succession. And I was really debating, honestly, between what I was going to do here, because I mentioned last time we did an episode that I thought I would go Barry this week, and I was going to feel that way as well. But as I got to the final episode, I was a little bit mixed, you know? So I went and I checked, and I looked at Succession, and I think about the fact that Mark Molloy directed the finale, Jesse Armstrong wrote the finale. They're kind of like the two brains behind Succession. You know, they are the creators of the show. They've been, you know, writing and directing a handful of episodes every season. You know, they're the founders of the show. And I'm wondering if I do a split MVP between those two, you know, because they're, we could talk about the actors and the performances, but it all comes down to the writing, you know, and the storytelling. I feel like that's more relevant today than it has been in a while. So I'm gonna love to give it to Mark Molloy and Jesse Armstrong as two co-creators behind Succession. And even if I was down between Succession and Barry and going back and forth, but I feel like when you look at the reality of the week, like Succession was the talk of the week, right? And Barry did well, but it wasn't like the topic that everyone was seeming to be talking about. And Succession managed to do that every week, you know, even, and they also had series high ratings this week for the finale. So I feel like I got to give the kudos to Succession for me.
All right, yeah, I'm down with that. So, yeah, like I flashed the MVP of the week while you were talking. So, yeah, the creators of Succession are our MVP of the week. And with that, I know on the sidebar it says top streaming shows. That meant to say top streaming finales. Blame the person that makes the sidebar. They have now been fired. Yeah, because if you can't put out quality work, the Hand Plus podcast doesn't want you. Spoiler alert, I'm the person who made the sidebar.
He's fired.
Yeah, he's fired. Tristan, you want me to go first? Are we going to do this top 10 style?
Let's do this top 10 style.
All right. I'll go first. I'll do my 10 to 6 and then you do your 10 to 6. We'll do and then I'll do my 5 to or yeah, I'll do my 5 to 3, you do your 5 to 3 and then we'll swap 2 and 1.
It'll be interesting. I'm not sure how much crossover we'll have, but I'm thinking we'll have at least a couple.
All right. So, you know, I went cross decades, cross streaming platforms, crossed. I'm gonna say it's. I'll say it's mine is probably sitcom heavy, surprisingly. But I will kick it off with my number 10. It's a show that's very popular. It's not as popular as I feel it deserves. I feel there are other sitcoms that are better than this. But my number 10 finale, currently streaming, is the Friends finale. For a sitcom that was that popular, that beloved, and that long running, to nail a finale is pretty hard. There's a lot of finales that some people like that I think generally are regarded as bad. I think of the Seinfeld finale. You know, and for a show that didn't have like a major arc running through it, I feel like it would have been very easy to mess up the finale. But them all, you know, moving out of the apartments, which the show had been mostly set in during its entire run, and the final shot of them placing their keys on the counter and walking out, and as they're walking out, someone says, "Oh, let's go get coffee," and Chandler says, "Oh, where should we go?" It's kind of a joke of them always hanging out at Central Perk, and the final shot being on like that iconic door. I think it's, you know, one of the all-time great finales, especially because of how easy it would have been to mess it up, and that's why Friends is my number 10.
Yeah, I think Friends is a go-to whenever anyone's ending a sitcom ever. They say, okay, you gotta like make it as good as Friends, you know, because Friends, everyone was watching that show and everyone was gonna watch that finale and the pressure was on. I think it's telling that with all these revivals and things coming back, no one has said yes on Friends because the ending was too good. All the actors are like, you know, we're not gonna come back and ruin the ending because it was just too good to come back to, you know? So I think that's a good call.
Yeah, and I love the Paul Rudd story he talks about there, where he had kind of come onto the show the last season because they wanted to give Phoebe a love interest, and he was there at the finale, and he was just like, "I don't really belong here. Like, what am I doing here?" And feeling like he was witnessing history, but also like part of history, and how it was just this weird thing in his mind. But number 9, for me, is a show I didn't watch too much, but I remember the finale. I remember being kind of old enough to understand the show as it was coming into its final seasons, and that is ER, where one of the main characters of the show, he was starting his own doctor practice, and it kind of gave a reason for all of these past cast members to come back and give support for him starting his own practice. And then one of the kind of newer characters on the show, is an intern, was actually the daughter of one of the early cast members, one of the, you know, from season one, episode one cast members who had the character had died from cancer midway through the show. And this the series finale ended with the final line of, which was how the episode one finale ended, where they were talking about Dr. Green, but instead of talking about her father, it was talking about her. And I thought it was a good wrap up of the show. You know, it was a good way where you like, especially a long running show like that, which had a changing cast, it was a good way. They found a good creative way to bring most everyone back without it feeling forced, and also having a good story on top of it while paying homage to everything that had come before. And that's why ER is my number 9 series
Good. I
finale.
watched a handful of episodes, but I didn't make it that far. You know, I watched some here and there that were the big episodes, but I didn't make it to the end, so I'll trust your judgment on that one.
All right. And my number 8, I messaged you earlier. I have a cheat. And because this isn't technically the finale, it was written and created to be the finale, but the network wanted to rearrange the show and have certain episodes in different order, which networks like to do, especially for animated shows and sitcoms. But this episode was intended to be the finale, and this is To Sirloin with Love, one of the great episodes of King of the Hill, the animated Mike Judge show. Essentially, one of the overall themes of the show was Bobby Hill and Hank Hill not having anything in common. Father and son, Hank Hill, like this classic American dad, like, oh, you gotta be tough. this, that, and Bobby, his like dream was to be a comedian. And Hank Hill obviously sold propane and propane accessories, liked meat, liked grilling steaks. And they found out in the final episode, Bobby Hill has like a knack. You know, he's basically a savant when it comes to judging meats and knowing everything about meats. And he enters this meat, you know, judging competition, and where essentially you like give meat like a grade A or this, that, and the third. And it was like the first time that Hank and Bobby ever had common ground. And I think it's just a great, like, heartwarming, wholesome episode, especially for a show like that. It didn't necessarily need to be like this big overall thing. It was just almost, it kind of reminds me of the Everybody Loves Raymond finale, where it was just a show about a family. It didn't need anything crazy. It was almost felt like every other episode. But I think in a way it kind of worked. But also having kind of like a finality to it of finally Bobby and Hank have something in common.
I like that. It's a really simplistic kind of end for a show that is very simple and about like the small little things in life and the people that are around you. It feels nice that it ended on something that wasn't huge and too big for anything. It was just this nice moment between the father and the son, you know?
Yep. All right. And that was my number eight. My number seven finale, currently stream, and I don't know if I said it, but King of the Hill is on Hulu, ER is on Hulu, and Friends is on Max. My number seven is on Prime Video, and that is the House finale. House, for anyone who doesn't know, show a procedural show about a doctor who kind of plays by his own rules, based on Sherlock Holmes. And for the finale, they heavily borrowed from one of the Sherlock Holmes books. Throughout one of the final arcs of the show is House's best friend, Wilson, who's an oncology doctor, has cancer, and he's going to die, and he kind of wants to go on one last adventure. So House does something crazy. Everyone thinks he died, but in the end, it's slowly revealed that House didn't die. Spoiler alert. Faked his own death, and now he's run off with Wilson for kind of one last adventure. Just a solid episode, great end to the show. I don't know if you've ever watched House, but...
I have seen House, but I didn't make it to the finale on it, so I'm glad to know that it ended, because I didn't actually know much about how House ended, so I'm glad that it had a good ending.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like it. I did, and this isn't top 10 best, it's top 10 favorite, so I put House as my number 7 finale.
Yeah, there's definitely some on here for me that were favorites more than best, you know?
And 6 is an all-time classic. At one point, it was the most watched television event of all time. And that is Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, the MASH finale, which is currently streaming on Hulu. It's basically a television movie. I believe it was like an hour plus long. One of the all-time great television shows. Another thing where they could have fumbled the ending. The ending could have been bad. They could have tried to do too much or not enough. But, it was the end of the war. Everyone was going home, saying goodbye to each other. And just a great all-time iconic TV finale.
Yeah, it's definitely an all-timer. And I think what makes it so much of an all-timer is that final reminder of, like, they're definitely at war. And war sucks and people are going to die. You know, like, this was a fun comedy, but there's like the reality check of, you know, it's a war. So mm-hmm. I feel like that contrast of the finale for MASH definitely makes it something that was special.
Yeah. All right. So that's my 10 through 6. What are your 10 through 6?
My number 10 is a little bit of a cheat because this show ended and had a finale. And then a little while later, the network was like, let's try it again. And had a bit of a flop revival for one season or so. And that's Finale. That's Scrubs, currently streaming on Hulu. That's my number 10 finale. It was called My Finale. And I have it this low because it's not necessarily like a super creative or ambitious finale, but it's JD's last day at work at the hospital, you know, so he's wrapping everything up and saying goodbye to his friends and the people who inspired him. And the final moments are kind of him reminiscing about his time and kind of flashing back, if you haven't seen it, walking kind of down the halls at Sacred Heart for the last time. And as he's walking down, he's kind of seeing all the people that were there, who were there over the years that influenced him in different ways. So you have tons and tons of actors coming back, even people who had like tiny bit roles for a couple episodes come back for this one scene where JD's walking down the hallway and seeing them all for one last time. And then he leaves the hospital and kind of has this this imagination of what his life might be with his wife and his friends, you know, Elliot and the child and coming together, and what he imagines his future might hold for him at and leaving this hospital. But it is all a fantasy. You don't quite know if that's really what happened. It's more of like what JD imagines his life could be. So for me, it's a nice finale of like really, really pulling your heartstrings, like playing the sad music and making you want to cry for your characters you spent so much time with. And for me, I cry every time I watch this episode. It really hit me in the emotional heartstrings. And it's at number 10 because it's not quite as ambitious as some of the more higher ranked ones. But if you're looking for just, you know, the characters get a flash forward of what they think their future is going to hold, you get a nice of pulling on your heartstring finale where everybody comes back and you get to see all the characters again. You know, that's a type of finale that I think really resonates. And for me, Scrubs is one of the best that does that.
All right. And where's that on? What streaming service?
It's on Hulu right now.
Okay. All right. And what's your number 9?
My number 9, I have one that's talked about all the time, so I won't go on too long, but it's The Sopranos on streaming on Max right now. What I love about The Sopranos ending is that it's ambiguous in his fate, but I don't think it's ambiguous in what the show is actually about, you know, because the show The Sopranos wasn't really about who's going to get got, really. It was about, is Tony Soprano going to change? Is he going to become a better, more self-actualized person? And is that even going to matter in the end, you know, because what is all the, you know, the self-awareness really going to do for him, you know, if he's gone too far down this path already? And I feel like the finale, leaving what it leaves ambiguous, is done purposefully, because in that moment you're already done with Tony's arc. You've already accepted the fact that this man is not going to change. He's stuck in his existential rut forever, and if he lives or dies at this point, it doesn't matter because his arc is complete, you know. And I feel like that is what that finale was about. And it's about so many other things, but I feel like that the biggest debate on the finale is like that cut to black. Was it good? Was it bad? Should they have revealed what happened? For me, they should not have, because I think that is the statement of Sopranos. It was never about the mob stuff. It was not about the action. It was about Tony Soprano and his family. And that final scene is Tony Soprano and his family. So I love the finale of Sopranos.
Yeah, it's a show I've never watched, but obviously the finale is iconic. You know, you've heard stories of a bunch of people like checking their cables, wondering if their cable went out right at the end, trying to figure out what happened. But, you know, a lot of people have theorized, and especially going back when Tony Soprano talking about what is death, like what do you think happens when you die, and he says he thinks it's just a hard cut to black, that a lot of people speculate that he was killed in that diner. So
I definitely think I'm on the side of him being killed for sure.
All right, and so that was your number 9. What about your number 8?
My number 8 is one that is also talked about a bit. It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime and also on AMC Plus and also on Freevee, the free version of Amazon Prime, so you can watch for free if you haven't seen Mad Men. I definitely recommend checking out Mad Men. It was the earliest of the earliest of the golden age of TV for me, like that time when TV was really reviving itself before Breaking Bad. If this would put AMC on the map, was Mad Men. It follows a bunch of ad executives and their various, you know, people around them and their families and their coworkers in the 1960s. And I love this show. I love Don Draper. John Hamm is incredible, empathetic, but also just like despicable in this lead. And similar to Sopranos, the show is about all of the ad antics, but it's also about, is Don Draper going to change? Is he going to grow? Is he going to realize, you know, who he is as a person and better himself? And they hold you out until literally just the last little tiny frame of the show, making you wonder, is John going to change? Is he not going to change? And it has you questioning that until literally the last single frame. Even after the cut to black, you're still kind of like questioning, and then they kind of give it to you. And you get that answer right at the last second. And I think it's really cool that they do that. But I love that this show sends Don on such a personal journey and all over the world. And then like this finale kind of just focuses in on Don Draper. The supporting cast has already kind of had their arcs complete before this, so you get them here and there, but this whole finale is really about Don out in California trying to figure out himself, his one final shot to figure out himself. And I love Mad Men. I love the kind of calm and serene finale of him sitting out on that hill meditating, the slow zoom onto his face. You know, I'm gonna remember that forever, and I'm gonna remember the fact that you could go to other channels that night, and they would be saying, don't watch us, go watch Mad Men. And I was one of those people. I watched Mad Men. I loved Mad Men. And for a show that changed TV so much, I feel like it's not quite talked about to the level of Breaking Bad or things like that today. So go back and watch your classics that really kicked us into the era we're in now.
All right. So, yeah, number eight, you got Mad Men. And what about your number seven?
My number seven, I have one that is a bit of a more personal cut here, and that's Mr. Robot. It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime. The fourth season finale was called Hello, Elliot. And for me, I put this on because it pulls off just some unbelievable level twists and things where it pulls off a twist where you think, surely that can't make sense. And then they start walking you through it, and you start to realize, my God, they've been planting seeds since like the first episode for this ungodly crazy twist that they're pulling on me right now. And I can't believe it. And I think the buildup of Mr. Robot going from just this spy thriller about a hacker who's trying to take down a big evil corporation to slowly building into this like surreal, like dive into mental health and into like what mental illness looks and feels like, you know, and like a cinematic portrayal of that. And I love this show. I love how ambiguous it got and how crazy it got in the last couple of seasons. I know this show dropped off significantly in terms of ratings and in terms of critical attention because it got so out there and so just Sam Esmail doing anything he wanted to do. And kind of, like, this is a show where one person wrote and directed every episode, especially later on. And it became this art project of him just experimenting with all these odd ways of doing things. And the finale being able to pull all of that craziness together and to actually deliver and not, and like, it doesn't retcon this twist. It actually, you can actually tell they legitimately set this up for the entirety of the series. And it's mind blowing. I'm not sure I love the twist itself, but it's a shocking twist, and it works, and it put it on the list for me. And I just love the style of the show, and I wish more people watched it because it's just so cool and it's so stylish and it's so cinematic. And it should have gotten crazy, crazy attention. It could have gotten awards across the gambit, but it didn't. And I'm sad about that.
All right. So your number seven was Mr. Robot. And what about your number six before we jump back to my number five?
My number six is one that I know you've seen, Joe. It's currently streaming on Disney Plus, and that is Star Wars, The Clone Wars.
We'll punt on that a little bit.
I thought we might be punting that one up a little bit.
All right. So we're going to do my five through three, and then we're going to jump. So my number five is animated show. I believe this one of three animated shows on my list, and that is the Justice League Unlimited finale, currently on Netflix and Max. Obviously, Justice League Unlimited is an animated show that follows, quote-unquote, the Justice League, surprisingly enough. And the finale is great. It slowly build up over time to the big fight against Darkseid, who is trying to bring or turn Earth into the hellscape that is Apocalypse. And the finale starts with Lex Luthor. Well, at the end of the penultimate episode, Lex Luthor finds out that Darkseid's coming and he's going to destroy Earth. And so Lex Luthor goes to the Justice League and says, hey, just so you know, Darkseid's coming. He's going to destroy Earth. We need to stop him or we're all going to die. And he pleads with the Justice League to let the Legion of Doom help. And they're reluctant at first. But Lex is like, look, we live here too. If he succeeds, we're all going to die. And they reluctantly agree. However, they decide to split teams up so the Legion of Doom isn't all together and that they are working within the working with other members of the Justice League. And it also gives us one of my all-time favorite Superman moments, where Darkseid, who's this massive gargantuan, basically Thanos was inspired by Darkseid, but Darkseid is bigger, more powerful, stronger. And Darkseid has taken out all of the Justice League except Superman. And Superman looks at Darkseid and essentially like, all my life, I felt like I lived in a world made of cardboard. Always being careful at every moment. Because if I wasn't, I could hurt somebody or break something. But you can take it. And it's Superman for the first time in his life, essentially being able to unleash his full might against somebody. And it's just a great speech by Superman, great moment by Superman. So you get some great Lex Luthor moments, some great Superman moments, some great Batman moments. It's, to me, it's the perfect Justice League story. perfect Legion of Doom story. It's just all around great, and that obviously, as a massive comic book fan, massive Batman fan, as someone who likes Superman, that's why I had to put it at number 5 on my all-time series finale list. I don't know if you've watched this, Tristan. I assume you have, but...
Yeah, I didn't put it on my list. I didn't really think of it when I was doing the list, but it's a good pull, and I definitely think for doing our top, our own top 5 here, it's one that I'll be willing to put there on the list for sure.
All right. Great. And my number 4, another sitcom, a classic 90s sitcom, and that's the finale of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, currently streaming on Paramount Plus, Max, and Hulu. Essentially, all of the members of the Banks household are moving out, going on, doing their own things. The Banks are selling their house, and they ultimately, you know, you have all of these people coming in through the finale, all of these kind of guest stars coming in through for the finale, even including Donald Trump, looking to buy the Banks household, wanting to tour it. And the audience knows, but the house doesn't know, that Will is lying about having something to go to, a place to live, because he feels kind of insecure because everyone else is going off and doing these things where he's not, and he ultimately has to reveal, like, hey, I'm not really going off to do anything. Everything kind of fell through for me. Ultimately, he decides to just stay in California and finish college. And then, obviously, you're a fan of classic 70s TV show, the Jeffersons end up buying the Banks household. So they moved on up yet again into an even bigger house, buying the Banks household. A lot of great moments if you're a fan of the show. The Jeffrey, the butler, who throughout the entirety of the series has called Will's character Master Will, but right after he essentially quits, and because the family's not living there anymore, he for the first time in the show calls Will just Will, and it's kind of a great moment because you know they've had a friendship, but he always said that there's a reason, you know, butlers have to maintain this butler relationship, but once he's no longer their butler, he can finally just be his friend. And it's a great moment. I think one of the best sitcom endings of all time. And that's why I had to put it at number 4 on my list.
I love that finale. I love that show. You know, all-time show for that era. So I'm happy with that pick.
All right. And my number 3 is the one we punted from before. And that is the series finale for The Clone Wars. It's really just that last 4 episodes. That's that final arc of The Clone Wars. But if you're a Star Wars fan, if you've watched The Clone Wars, I think most people would have that final arc as the top 2 or 3 arc of the series. The perfect intertwining with Revenge of the Sith, even though if you actually try to sit down and break down the timeline of the sequence of events, you're like, timeline doesn't match up, because if you're watching The Clone Wars, this feels like it should all take place over the course of a couple hours. However, if you're watching Revenge of the Sith, you're like, this should take place over the course of a couple months. But doesn't matter. I think it works perfectly. The ending is great. You don't even have to watch Revenge of the Sith, and you can feel that emotional impact of the ending. The show, honestly, I don't think could have ended any better. Tristan, I know it was on your list. What did you want to say about the Clone Wars finale?
Yeah, I think it's a great finale. It's a show that's come back and gotten canceled and come back and gotten canceled a couple of times, and I feel like this finale was so definitive that there's no point in bringing it back now. You know, this is the true ending between, you know, the Maul and the Ahsoka stuff and the Mandalore stuff. It felt like it was all the biggest creations of the Clone Wars too. Like, this finale did not really involve a lot of the, like, Star Wars characters, right? It was mostly Clone Wars original characters, the clones that essentially got built out within the Clone Wars. Ahsoka that was created entirely for the Clone Wars, Darth Maul that was a minor character really in the prequels that became a major character in the Clone Wars. So I feel like what makes it such an impressive finale is they didn't have to lean on, oh, and here's this character, and here's this character, and here's this character. They leaned on the characters that they built themselves and the arcs that they started themselves, and that makes it a really impressive finale for an IP, especially that seems like it gets criticized a lot for being like, oh, here's this character and this character and this character and this thing. This ties into the story and the moments, but it doesn't feel like it's relying entirely on here's that thing you remember and here's that character you remember. So I love this finale, and it's very definitive and very climactic and just a great way to wrap everything up of that whole era. It feels like a finale of like the entire prequel era more than even just the one show.
Yep, I agree. And before we get to year 5 through 3, we do have some more comments by Spinner 58. They said the two best finales are Saint Elsewhere and Bob Newhart. Saint Elsewhere currently streaming on Hulu. Bob Newhart, I believe, currently streaming on Amazon Prime. So if you want to check those shows out and watch those finales, that's the best spot to do that. And Tristan,
I consider both of them because I know that they're so famous for their twists, you know, and I wanted to get like a big twisty finale on there, but I felt like those are shows where I watched the finale without having watched much of the show.
Yeah.
But those are both great finales, so I definitely back up the endorsement. They were both in consideration for the list.
Yeah, I get it. It's just hard when like I haven't watched it, and it's like, yeah, people say it's good. I haven't watched it, so I don't know. I felt like disingenuous to put it on my list of favorite finales. So Tristan, what is your number 5?
My number 5, it might be a bit of a recency bias, and people might expect a different show than this one, but I went with Better Call Saul for my number 5. I love the way that this wraps up so much of the Breaking Bad universe without getting distracted in the whole universe of it. It feels like it's very much bringing Saul Goodman's story to a close, and he just happens to be interacting with all these other characters and storylines you might remember, you know, and people you didn't expect to show up, people you did expect to show up, people coming back again, but it all feels kind of natural within Saul's world, and it all feels very, very tragic. I feel like something that is ingrained into Better Call Saul even more than Breaking Bad is like the sense of tragedy, like what this person could have been like if they applied themselves in the right directions. And these last moments with Saul, you really feel like this guy is just this broken shell that's desperate for anything to hold on to. But he also kind of made the right call in the end. You had a show here where a bad person was in a bad place and did terrible things, but then in their final moments as a person, they kind of started to make the right decision. And it feels like we've had so many of these broken man shows where, you know, like, oh, can the guy change? Can he be better? No. Can he change? Can he get better? No. And I feel like Better Call Saul actually has a note where it's like, you know what? You're not going to maybe become a good person, but you can like pay for your sins and kind of like start to put yourself in a positive direction. And I really felt that in Better Call Saul. And those last moments with him and Kim, kind of their last looks at each other, like those longing looks, and it's one of those shows where you just don't want the shots to end, like you're holding on to those last couple seconds with, you know, holding your breath, just wanting to soak in every single little inch of the screen because you don't want to leave these characters behind, but you know you're about to. And I love this finale. It's way better to me than the Breaking Bad finale, better as a show in general, but I feel like as a finale it's really resonated with me. It really kind of hit harder than anything in Breaking Bad ever hit for me. So I love this finale, and I can't wait to go back and watch this whole show over again.
All right. Yeah, I've watched all of Breaking Bad. I enjoyed it. It's not a show I've ever gone back to because it feels more like a 30-hour movie, even longer, like a 50, 60-hour movie, and not so much like a television show in the way of like, oh, you can just check out a random episode. If you're going to watch it, you kind of have to start at season 1, episode 1 and watch all the way through. But I haven't dipped my toes really into Better Call Saul. I know it's got rave reviews. I know it's got super high praise. I just haven't watched it, but I definitely need to. So that's your number 5. What's your number 4?
My number 4 is one that's talked about quite a lot on lists, and one that definitely hit for me is 6 Feet Under. Also currently streaming on Max, like a handful of the ones have been. But 6 Feet Under followed a family that ran a funeral home in Southern California. You had Michael C. Hall on there prior to Dexter. It was kind of like his big breakout role on the show. It was like a young, very, very uptight, closeted gay man running this funeral home. And over the course of, I think it's 5 seasons, you follow this ups and downs of these families. And each episode is very structured. So each episode is about one funeral that they're doing the funeral for. It kind of opens with the person dying and then follows their funeral being prepared, and you pick up with the character storylines as they're going through the preparation for this funeral. And the finale decided that the best way to end this show, it's a show about death, a show where every episode begins with a character dying and then coming up with kind of like, you know, it would be Joe Furke this year through this year, and kind of, you know, like an in memoriam type of thing at the beginning of every episode. So they ended this series with an in memoriam for every single character, and they essentially went through and showed how every character through the entire show died and when they died and how they died. So you get kind of, some of them are kind of funny and ridiculous in the way that death can be, and some of them are really tragic and sad in the way that death can be. Some of them are also, you know, peaceful and calm in the way that death can be. And I love the closure of the show of getting to see that final moment for all of these characters, and for a show that is so much about death and so much about like embracing life while it's there, because it's so fragile and it's just so temporary. I love the way that it's ended with our main character, a young girl driving off, leaving her family behind for the first time. And as she's driving off, you're getting these flashes of each of these characters and their final moments and how they wrap things up. So it's a really emotional final moment, but it's just a great way to wrap things up, and has all those highs and lows of laughing and crying and just feeling that brutal, brutal punch of like existentialism, where you're like, man, my life is flying before me. I might as well do something cool with it.
All right. Yeah, it's a show it's a show I've heard about. I didn't really even know anything about it. Like, even when you're talking about the structure, I had no idea that was part of it. I've never watched an episode clearly. But yeah, it gets a lot of high praise. And I believe that was your number 4. So what's your number 3?
My number 3, you know, I did one for them, so here's one for me, is The Leftovers, also on HBO Max. It started off in a small town, following a couple of years after a mysterious event where 2% of the world's population just kind of vanishes for no explicable reason. Justin Theroux is the lead. You have Carrie Coon as Nora Durst. She's kind of like the love interest, kind of secondary lead. You also have Margaret Qualley, who went on to, is kind of having this big budgeting career right now. She was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood after this. And you also have Liv Tyler, who, of course, is in Lord of the Rings and a bunch of movies and TV shows. So a pretty stacked cast, but it follows these people and how the world is kind of adjusting to the fact that for no reason at all, people just can vanish. You know, there's no scientific reason, there's no religious reason, there's just people are just vanished. And you see these cults that pop up, you see these kind of extremist nihilists who are like, oh, nothing matters, if 2% of the world can disappear, then our whole lives are pointless, let's just like give up everything we have because it's pointless. And you follow this one main character who's this cop desperately trying to hold on to like rational thought. You know, it's very similar to Lost, where it's like this conflict between reality and fiction, and reality is the practical and the supernatural, I would say. And Kevin Garvey is trying so hard to hold on to the practical explanation for things, as it gets more and more and more obvious that there might not be a practical explanation for this. What I love about the show is that it never gives you an answer. It never tells you what happened. It never tells you why anybody vanished. It just kind of follows these characters as they're trying to adjust to this fact that it happened, you know, and it walks that line between practical and spiritual all the time without ever giving you any explanation. It'll go all the way into the crazy supernatural side where you think, oh, surely they're revealing this. And then they'll kind of like pull you back again and give you, well, here's how it could have happened though. And I love that. And the finale does that so well. It focuses in on those two characters, and it doesn't give you an explanation, but it gives you like a person's experience of what the explanation might have been. And it's up to you if you believe that character or not, but this is what they feel that happened. I don't want to get into too much detail, but I love this show. It's a quick little 3-season run. It's all on HBO Max and very existential, very strange. Throws all kinds of crazy questions at you, and then actually answers every single individual question that it throws at you, at least the ones it wants to answer. Except for that main question, it answers everything else. But I love the show. Can't recommend it enough.
All right. That's your 3. That's The Leftovers on Max, I believe.
Yes, sir.
My number 2 is a show that was probably my favorite show, you know, growing up as a teenager. I never really watched it as it came out, but watching it on Disney Channel, ABC Family, I think it's one of the all-time great finales, underrated, and that's the Boy Meets World finale on Disney Plus. I think for a show that started off as a relatively serious show about this middle school kid, and then kind of as he gets older in high school and college, so it gets a little wilder and weirder, but nothing too crazy. But the final moments where Corey and his friends are going, you know, they're graduated college and they're going off into the real world, going back to see their home, their family, and going back to their high school classroom for the last time to see Mr. Feeney. And they want like one last piece of advice from him, one last piece to go off into the world with. And he's, you know, you have Topanga, Corey, Sean, and Eric there. And he says, you know, dream, try, and do good. And Topanga says, don't you mean do well? And he says, no, do good. And you got Eric there saying, like, oh, man, you know, we were your favorite students. Tell us you love us. And Mr. Feeney's like, oh, I loved all my students equally. And they go back and forth trying to get Feeney to tell him that he loved them more than all of the other students. And he basically is like, no, there's like a specific relationship between a teacher and student. I can't say that. And so they all give Feeney a hug and they all walk out the door. And, you know, Feeney turns the lights off and says, I loved you all. Class dismissed. And the show's over. And I think it's great final moment, great series finale. You know, it's just a good show, great family show, and good finale, like I said.
I definitely liked it. I think, yeah, that relationship between the characters and the students is what we think about for that show a lot, but I feel like the relationship between the students and the teachers is so important, and it's such like an embodiment of that show, too. And when you look back on it, and I was an adult too, like when I look back on that time in my life, there's so many teachers that really did like form me as a person, you know, and they might not even know it, you know, but that relationship you do have between a student and a teacher is so special and so unique. And I feel like that finale and those final moments for me always resonate because it captured that relationship so well. And I've had teachers like that in my life that impacted me so much that I always think about them when I watch this and wonder what their lives are up to, do what they're doing. Hopefully they're still kicking it, you know. Hopefully they're still doing good.
Yep, I agree. All right, that was my two. What was your two?
My two is slightly a cheat, Joe. I'll see what you think about my number two cheat, because there's two finales to Twin Peaks. Much like the title itself, I feel like I'm going to make a point to put a double-headed finale here for my number two, because you have the Twin Peaks finale from 1992, currently streaming on Paramount Plus. The season two finale of Twin Peaks. David Lynch had been ousted from the show for about half the season or so. Had kind of gone off the rails, had all kinds of crazy plots going on. You know, someone had hit their head and was now convinced they were a high school student, even though they were a grown adult woman. They had been going through the entire season doing high school antics, you know, joining the wrestling team. And then David Lynch comes back and says, that's stupid, we're not doing that anymore. Hits her head again. She just wakes up and is fine. You know, I love that. You know, that's something I love about this finale is David Lynch comes back and is like, nope, I don't like that. I don't like that. And kind of like resets things back to the way he wants them to be and has this kind of like really kind of mean ending that I feel like is very Lynchian. And of course, that ending ends up being the ultimate 25-year cliffhanger because Twin Peaks came back for a return, which is kind of its own miniseries thing on Showtime, but also on Paramount Plus, if you have the Paramount Plus Showtime combo thing. So I'm going to combine my Twin Peaks ranking here, and I'm going to put Twin Peaks number two because I feel like you can count both finales as kind of a finale. But if I was going to count one, I'd go ahead and pick the 1992 finale from Paramount Plus.
I think Twin Peaks is a weird show that I'll give you. You can count both of them as one thing. You know, why not?
And I think when you talk about finales, this kind of very much, especially the newest one, engaged with like what TV finales are and like the closure we look for in those finales is very artificial. And like, what does it mean that we want that much closure that we can't, we're never going to get closure like that in real life, but we go to TV because we want everything to wrap up perfectly in every single possible way. And the Twin Peaks finale almost kind of like lampoons that and then kind of like pulls it off from under you. So I definitely love Twin Peaks finale. I love the kind of middle finger of both of these finales, and I love that it's David Lynch just ending it exactly how he wants to end it, not really caring what anybody else wants from the show. You know, I think that's what made it great, so that's why it's on my number two.
All right, yeah, I've not watched a single thing of Twin Peaks, so I have no comment on that. I will just jump to my number one, and that is my favorite show of all time, and the greatest finale of all time, in my opinion, and that's why it's my number one, and that is the Parks and Rec finale currently on Peacock. Parks and Rec obviously started off as it was supposed to be a spinoff of The Office, but then it kind of became its own thing, not connected to The Office in any way except having one of the writers of The Office go on and create Parks and Rec. You know, is this supposed to be this Parks and Rec team or Parks and Rec office in this small fictional Indiana town? And over time, the show, it kind of abandoned the idea of them building parks because you just became such a fan of these characters that you really didn't care what they were doing, and they've got most of them gone off and left the parks department, but you still kind of followed that core character. And come to the finale, for the final season, they did like a 3-year time jump. And then going into the finale, similar to what you were saying with Six Feet Under, it kind of for each character had like a time jump, and you saw multiple time jumps where you saw how all of the characters ended up in the future, with them having kids, growing, you know, growing older, and where their, how their lives turned out. And I think it's the perfect finale for Parks and Rec, because as the show kind of got more and more absurd and crazy and off the rails and less realistic, the finale made sense for that show, and it was a little bit absurd and unrealistic where, you know, they hint at one of the characters becoming president of the United States. You're not sure which one it is. You kind of have an idea. But I love the finale. I don't know if you were ever much of a Parks and Rec person, if you saw the finale, but
I liked Parks and Rec. The final season, I think, is one of the weaker seasons, to be honest. But I did like the show quite a lot. I thought the finale was strong. I think it's satisfying, you know, to wrap all those characters up. I feel like it's also, in a way, sort of like making fun of those types of finales, right? Where it starts to become very ridiculous as they're flashing forward to the future. And it feels like it's goofing on, like, that type of finale where they flash forward to the future and show everything wrapping up for all the characters, because it starts to get pretty goofy. But I like the finale of Parks and Rec. It's not going to be on my top list, but it was a good show. It was an okay final season.
Well, you can have an opinion. That's fine. I'm very curious. I have no idea what your number one is going to be, because I kind of expected it to be Twin Peaks.
I can't wait to see what your number one is, Joe.
Because that was really, my number one. I said my number
one. Oh, that was your number one?
Yeah,
I thought so. I was like, you know what? How could be something be higher than that? But you're right. My number one is, it's a streaming show, and I ended up having my number one be a Netflix original series. This is an animated show called BoJack Horseman. BoJack Horseman follows a horse who is also a man. He's a famous, it's a set in a world where like people and animals are kind of like living together. You know, there's people who are walking around like humanoid, you know, cats and dogs and bears, and there's also those people, you know. And this is set in Hollywood. It follows BoJack Horseman, who's this washed up 90s sitcom star who was really big on a Full House style cheesy sitcom in the 90s, and he's kind of been coasting off of that fame ever since, you know, living off the royalty checks in the Hollywood mansion, not really doing anything with his life, just kind of like an alcoholic looking back on his life. And this kind of similar vein to a lot of the shows I talked about is examining like the possibility of change, and you push this person to a point where they've done so many unforgivable things, but yet you're seeing the inner turmoil to such detail that you feel bad for them, and it really kind of pushes your empathy to the maximum, where you understand this person's anguish and this person's trauma and this person's like mental health journey of where they're going to, but also you are seeing the people they're hurting and you're seeing the lives they're destroying, and at some point you struggle to root for this person again. And this show had the privilege and also like the negative of coming out, and then within a year or so of its release, there was the Me Too movement, and this show seems like it kind of had to engage with that directly. Like, its main character is someone who would be canceled in the modern real world. And so BoJack kind of gets himself canceled, and you follow that downfall of this person's career falling apart and to the point of, you know, pushing himself to the brink of death. And I love the finale. I think it does that thing that I mentioned where it leaves you slightly hanging, where you feel like BoJack has had this self-revelation of, he's finally hit that low point. He's finally hit, he's lost everything that he's had. He's gone to prison. You know, he's lost everything he can possibly have. And he comes out and you think maybe he's turning it around, but then he goes to this party, and the final season follows him at this party where he's running into all of his old friends a handful of years later. And you get this tiny little tease of like, oh God, is BoJack going to get back into the business? Is he going to go back and try and make a career again? That would be the worst thing he could possibly do. You know, he's had all this time to clean up, to figure out himself. Is he going to go right back onto that treadmill again? But they don't quite tell you if he is or not. And, you know, and this seems to engage with like, is there, if in TV shows, we can't really let our characters change, because if they do, there's no more TV show to watch, right? So if BoJack turns his life around and heals, like, there's not going to be any more show, right? So as an audience, we're kind of like imprisoning this character, this existential crisis, to always be breaking and always be regressing and always be falling back into a relapse. And it feels like as an audience, this show is like asking us to please just let him go and like let him live on his life, because if you keep watching, he's going to have to relapse. He's going to have to go back to the bottom again because that's the show, you know? So yeah. I love the finale of the show. It's very meta and very moving. And, you know, as someone who's had ups and downs in my life and has to try to improve myself in a lot of personal ways, this show really resonates with me. It's one that I go back to all the time when I need to motivate myself to, like, do something I can't do or want to feel better about my life or my goals. Like, this is a show that has inspired me so much. And the finale is a huge part of that. So I go back to it all the time. I watched it more than any of these episodes by a long million miles. So that's why it's my number one.
All right. So here's what I'm thinking. Never watched an episode of BoJack Horseman. I don't have a lot to comment there. I know we said, hey, we're going to each do our top 10 and then build the show's top 5. But we had one crossover, and that's Clone Wars. So, boom, Clone Wars automatically becomes number one. I had Justice League on my list. As soon as I said it, I felt like there was a part of you that was like, oh, if I had thought of it, it would have made my list. So probably that becomes number two. And then from there, we just alternate. Oh, his number one, then my number one, and his number two, until we make our top five. That's not fun. That's not interesting for anybody. So there you go. You could probably math it out. I would have let him go first because Justice League would have made my number two. So you can math it out from there and figure out what the top five would have been.
How I Met Your Mother, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, all those great finales. So there you go. It's some fun math for the viewers. Clone Wars finale number one, Justice League Unlimited finale number two, and then just figure it out from there. You good with that, Tristan?
I'm good with that.
Yeah, because it is 2 a.m. here. I'm tired as shit.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy birthday to me. We'll be back next week. Tristan, one final question for you. If there was a show that had an all-time bad finale that you could give an all-time great finale, like you said, a How I Met Your Mother, Game of Thrones, what would it have been?
It's gotta be Game of Thrones. You know, that final season was a shit show, but if it would have wrapped up with a finale that felt climactic and satisfying, we would have overlooked all of that garbage that got us there. But yeah. It feels like, you know, as a pop culture, we have not gotten past the finale of Game of Thrones. Like, that cynicism, I feel like, is not left pop culture ever since. Like, the double hitter of Game of Thrones and then Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, like, right afterwards, I feel like pop culture just, like, gave up after that. We were like, let's not believe in anything because nothing is ever going to live up to anything anymore.
It was like, yeah, I saw a bunch of things of, like, because COVID happened right after, essentially, the Game of Thrones, and it's like, during COVID, when everyone had all this free time, no one decided to rewatch Game of Thrones.
Because people were digging and watching anything they could find, and nobody went back and watched that.
Yeah. And so I think if that, like you said, if that finale was a banger, 10 out of 10, an all-time great finale, no, everyone would have been like, you know, the rest of the season wasn't that bad. So, yeah. All right. That wraps up our show. We'll be back next week.